MLB.com/MLB.
The following program is sponsored. The opinions and statements made by the hosts and guests do not necessarily reflect the views of WBOB or its parent company, the Chesapeake Portsmouth Broadcasting Corporation.
He's becoming a regular guest on the John Frederick Show, Patrick Theros. Mr. Ambassador, great to have you with us, sir.
Great. I really enjoy this show. I'm listening to you as well as talking to you occasionally.
Okay, so that's a lot of fun. Now we not only have a new guest, but a new listener, so we appreciate that, Ambassador Theros. Thank you so much. I want to get to the Gulf because, look, as the ambassador to the state of Qatar, obviously you know everything that's going on there, or certainly did, and you're very much dialed in, and we appreciate that, and your unique and insightful perspective. So this embargo with the state of Qatar and the Gang of Four continues to go on unabated, although I can't figure out what the purpose now of it is. It's backfired, blown up in the Saudis' face. Everything has turned out to be a disaster. If you ever were to write a history book, Mr. Ambassador, that would be called How to Do a Blockade and Have It Fail. This would be the poster child. But now the Saudis are saying, okay, so now we have a new plan, and that's we're going to build this $750 million canal, which is going to take away the land crossing, all the land crossing between Saudi Arabia and Qatar, and so turn it into an island. And like somehow that is going to further isolate the country. And, of course, the state of Qatar said, well, we'll just find ways around that like we did everything else you've done. Yeah. But what is the point of this?
I have absolutely no idea. I mean, this is probably the most mystifying part of the policies. First of all, I've been to the border area. There is one border crossing where the Qatari Peninsula comes into Saudi Arabia. There is exactly one border crossing in a small town called Salwa. Mm-hmm. The rest, way back when, the Saudis put up a sand berm. Basically, they took a lot of bulldozers and bulldozed up along the border a sand wall that varies from 10 to 30 feet high all along the entire border. So they've already got a pretty solid block against anybody crossing, not that anybody, you know, necessarily needs to. The other thing, if you look at a map, you realize that already about a third of the border is part of this inlet called Khor Oded, which actually, as I say, a third of the border is already water. This borders on the, boy, that was a bad pun, but this borders on the ludicrous. I can't figure out the engineering on this thing. If you go down into that area, there is this constant movement of sand from west to east.
Right.
And there are dunes, and not a lot of dunes, but enough. So this thing's going to fill up with sand every couple of years entirely. So unless you build this thing 10 miles wide, you're going to have a constant dredging problem. It also means you're going to have to put the thing on the Saudi side of the border because
right.
The Qataris aren't going to permit you to do it right on the border. So the Saudis will be basically cutting themselves off from a small piece of their own territory. Now, this isn't territory. It's worth much. So I suppose that doesn't bother them. Sooner or later, I mean, if the Qataris have got, the Saudis have got this idea that sooner or later they're going to force the Qataris to surrender and to be their vassal state again, then you're going to have to build a bridge across this thing. The currents in the area won't keep the thing clear of silt. So, maybe when they got rid of the Bin Ladens as an engineering company, they should bring them back because the guys are really good engineers. They could tell them that this is no way to build a canal.
When do we stop laughing at this? I mean, it's almost like out of a comic strip. You know, they're saying that the waterway would be 60 kilometers in length and 200 meters wide. As you just said, it would just fill up with sand, so that doesn't make any sense.
That's right.
They say they want it to be big enough 20 meters deep so that it will receive container and passenger ships. I don't even know how they would get through it with all the sand. Just the initial cost is $750 million, and that's way underestimated. So it almost seems to me like the Saudis are just like throwing this out there because their blockade, the embargo, has been such an economic catastrophe for them. It's blown up in their face. It's totally backfired. They all have egg on their face. The state of Qatar is better off today than it was before the embargo. They're stronger economically. They've expanded their trade routes. They've expanded their trading partners. They're getting better goods that are cheaper prices. Well, the whole thing has been a disaster for the Saudis, and now they're going to multiply that by trying to turn the state of Qatar into an island, which doesn't make any sense. We're with a former ambassador of the state of Qatar, Patrick Theros, who is with us as phones are ringing. I know you're a very busy guy. People probably heard you on my show. They're calling you up right now. They want to know what's going on. So where does this embargo end here? I mean,
there's been an expansion, and it's something a little bit concerning to me. If you remember that this whole choreography, the attack on Qatar, the blockade, the announcements, the hacking of Qatar news agency, all was preceded by a rather elaborate panel that was run by this strange little think tank here in Washington called the Federation for Defense of Democracies, the FDD. This is a place where a lot of the old neocons who brought us the Iraq War have taken refuge. And they began with a one-day program attacking Qatar as a supporter of terrorism. They brought a lot of people up. I think they duped a lot of people into believing this. So they had big panels and so forth. And this happened the day before the hacking and the day before relations were broken. So it was part of the choreography.
Mm-hmm.
In the last week, the same organization, the FDD, has gone after Oman and now is going after Kuwait. And they've been attacking Oman for failing to live up to its responsibilities in the GCC, for failing to support Saudi Arabia and the Emirates, the fight against terrorism, i.e. the fight against Qatar. And the last few days, they've gone after Kuwait for refusing to follow the Saudi line on what's happening with the peace process, the Palestinian-Israeli peace process. And it's been and these are rather vicious attacks that have been articles have been written. They've commissioned articles on their website and so forth, attacking Kuwait now. And these are the two countries in the GCC that have tried to stay neutral and have tried to mediate, particularly in Kuwait's case, have tried to mediate the dispute between Saudi Arabia. Now, one of the stories that leaked after the blockade began was that the UAE had been funding the FDD. So I'm wondering, I have no proof, but I am sure wondering, two and two makes four, is the FDD is still getting funding, I presume, from the UAE. And now they're going after Kuwait and Oman. So this has added a whole new development to the problem that I find a little bit scary.
So this is called the Federation of, did you say, Defensive
Federation for the Defense of Democracy.
Federation for the...
Foundation for the Defense of Democracy.
All right, let's get this straight. Foundation for the Defense of Democracy. And You're saying that this is basically a new think tank housed by...
It's been around a long time, but it was, it was sort of at the bottom of importance in this town. And all of a sudden, they've got new funding. They say that hacking the UAE emails that got reported in the press showed that the UAE had funded the FDV considerably in the lead up to the attack on Qatar, this program against Qatar. And now, as I say, they're leading the charge against Kuwait. And what's very interesting is they're leading the charge against Kuwait in the context of, in the context of the Kushner plan and Saudi Arabia and Israel and so forth. So really strange.
And you're saying that a lot of the makeup now is the neocons in Washington that have been kind of kicked out of the Trump administration influence there. So now they've kind of taken this organization over. Is that the way I understand it?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, if you look at their sort of their officers and so forth, it's the old guard neocons. You know, the guys who brought us Iraq.
Right. Iraq and the whole bit. Okay, and so the Foundation for Defensive Democracy, we'll look into that. And, we also had, there's no question that the Crown Prince of Saudi Arabia, Mohammed bin Salman, MBS, the breathtaking and bold fashion, right, which way he's consolidating power there,
right,
is counter to the way the Saudis have run that government for a very long time.
Absolutely, yeah.
And they've been able to basically get the Trump administration to look the other way. All these arrests he made, and now they're seeing reports that they've only really recovered about 10% of the money that they were after. And the Saudi economy is not doing well. So people average Saudis.
So why spend $750 million building the silly canal?
It makes no sense. It makes no sense at all. All right, we are with former ambassador of the state of Qatar, Patrick Theros, from Washington, D.C. Now, Mr. Ambassador, I want to get to what everybody is calling the kind of Jared Kushner, President Trump, the ultimate deal. And it's sort of like triangulation is the way I've presented it various times. It's like Jared Kushner went to the Middle East, he went to the Gulf, and he's trying to get all of the enemies of Iran, right, which would be
right,
Saudi Arabia, et cetera, to then embrace a treaty that what he would call the ultimate deal. And then I think pressure President, the Palestinian President Hamas, pressure him to come to the table. And I think what they're thinking of is, look, if we can get Hamas to the table and we can get the Saudis and the Gulf states, the Middle East, Egypt behind this, whatever the peace plan is, it's not leaked out. We don't know what it is. I think then they feel that they can then leverage the Israelis to be a part of it because of all the things they've done for them. How do you think it's going to play out? And has my description of it been somewhat accurate?
It's been about as accurate as any other description. It's like the elephant, there's seven blind men and the elephant, the guy holding on to the tail thinks it looks like a snake and the legs thinks it looks like a tree. There's contradictory stories. Let me tell you my own personal opinion.
Good.
Speculation, it's informed. I'm just trying to put them together from all the different stories I've heard, some of them from good sources, some of them from not. It appears that it isn't so much a peace plan as it is an attempt to, first of all, reduce the Palestinian resistance so it's no longer important and no longer a diversion for the Israelis, and to pull Saudi Arabia into a relationship with Israel that can then be leveraged to be a coalition against Iran.
Mm-hmm.
So the first part of the plan seems to be a massive economic development program for the West Bank, for the occupied territories, the West Bank and Gaza.
Mm-hmm.
That will so improve the economic situation of the Palestinians that they will find living under the occupation more tolerable than it is now.
Mm-hmm.
And so for this, obviously, you're talking about billions of dollars, and I don't think the administration wants to spend billions of dollars in the West Bank, aside from the fact that they probably couldn't get it out of Congress right now.
Mm-hmm.
What it appears is happening, and I have to keep telling you it appears because I don't think anyone knows for 100% sure except the people directly involved. It appears that Mr. Kushner is making the rounds of the region to get them to foot the bill, to get the Saudis and the Emiratis and the Qataris and everybody else to foot the bill for fixing the economy of the West Bank and Gaza. And this is why, you know, they keep talking about we're going to give them a deal that they have to take or leave. They won't be able to turn down. And I can't think of a political deal that would be acceptable to the Israelis that any Palestinian leader could sign on to without getting killed the next day.
Right.
So I just don't see the parameters of a political deal. Now, here is the second part of what we are seeing, and this is a little bit more direct.
Yes.
Back up. There is an agreement between Jordan and Israel that King Hussein, the King Abdullah of Jordan, is the custodian of the Muslim and Christian holy places in Palestine,
mm-hmm.
particularly in Jerusalem.
Right.
So the Christian churches, he is the protector of the Christian churches and the Muslim, and the various Muslim shrines and holy sites in Jerusalem.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a follow-on agreement to the peace treaty between Jordan and Israel. And there has been a lot of problems for Christians in Israel, in the East Bank. Not the East Bank, in East Jerusalem, excuse me, in the last couple of years, because there are some organizations there that for political reasons are trying to grab the lands that belong to the churches. Just a little bit of background. These are churches that have been in Jerusalem since Jesus was there. A missionary once asked a Palestinian friend of mine, said, who converted you to Christianity? The guy said, Jesus Christ. This is where Jesus began. So these are 2,000-year-old institutions that are
right.
In Jerusalem and in the Holy Land. In those 2,000 years, they've accumulated a huge amount of land, and that land, they rent that land out. They essentially, these churches operate real estate because this is what keeps them going. There are 600 churches and holy sites in and around Jerusalem. They have schools with 50,000 kids in the schools. They have charitable organizations and stuff like that. And all that is financed by the real estate. Well, that real estate is worth billions of dollars.
Right.
And there are some people in the Israeli political world that really like to put their hands on that real estate. And one of the biggest obstacles to doing so has been the fact that King Abdullah is the protector of the holy places. Okay, now it seems that the Israelis have suggested to Kushner, or maybe Kushner thought it up on his own, that the Israelis should agree that Saudi Arabia should be the protector of the Muslim and Christian holy places in Jerusalem. And let me tell you, I cannot think of a better way to essentially exterminate Christianity as an institution in the Holy Land, because I cannot imagine that the Saudis would put the same degree of enthusiasm and effort. I mean, King Abdullah has gone out, and his father, King Hussein, went out on the limb over and over again to try and stop these things. They've spent a lot of their political capital trying to protect both churches and the Muslim institutions. And I simply don't see the Saudis doing this. But what it is a great incentive to the Saudis, because it would truly make them the leaders of the Muslim world, because they're the custodians of the holy places in Mecca, in Medina, which are the first and second most important cities in the Muslim world, and yes. in Jerusalem, which is the third most important city.
Right.
So at that point, the Saudis... So this is, I think, a tremendous incentive to the Saudis, because politically it would be revolutionary. Every major holy city, the three major cities that are holy to Muslims in the world would then all be under the holy places would be under the custodianship of the King of Saudi Arabia.
Under the purview of the Saudis, but this would be a bad deal for Christians in Israel.
Right. I mean,
horrible deal.
The Muslims, it wouldn't affect them very much. It'd probably even help the Muslims a little bit. But the Christians, I mean, there are no Christian churches. There's no Christian activity in Saudi Arabia. The idea that even the Saudis would understand what the issues are, even if they were well-intentioned, they have no idea what the issues are.
Right. Nor do they have the... Nor do they...
Potentially catastrophic for the Christians. Because without that land, these churches are all going to close.
Right. They're all gone. Right. And then they're going to get sold for billions of dollars. So I've only got a little over a minute, but really, if you get to this Kushner plan, the ultimate deal, as they're calling it, we're not talking about a two-state solution. We're talking about a peaceful resolution where the Palestinians can live there in peace and they get along, and there's jobs and there's economic prosperity, rather than have some kind of a two-state solution. But there's so many obstacles to that.
Well, yeah, the first obstacle is that there is a very large part of the Israeli political spectrum doesn't want this to happen. Because this is not necessarily the majority of Israelis, but there are certain extremist political parties in Israel whose intent is to rid all of the land of Israel of of the Palestinians.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's going to be the first obstacle to it happening. And secondly, the Israelis are so deeply entrenched in the West Bank and have got so many security controls that the thing holding the West Bank back now economically and Gaza is the intensity and the ubiquity of Israeli security all over the place, so goods can't travel, people can't travel, can't get to their jobs, they can't get to can't get around. So in order to make this work, you'd have to lift the Israeli security apparatus in the West Bank and around Gaza. And I don't know how they're going to do that.
There's a lot of obstacles to this. I mean, I get what Kushner's trying to do, and it's on paper, you can draw a line to get there. But as you said, the political reality of doing it is very, very slim. We'll see how it plays out. But I definitely agree with you that putting these churches, taking them from King Abdullah in Jordan and giving them to the purview of the Saudis is a very bad deal for Christians in the state of Israel. Patrick Theros, we're out of time. Great analysis. Really appreciate your in-depth perspective. We've been chatting with the former ambassador of the state of Qatar, Patrick Theros.
Okay, I really enjoyed this. Thank you.
Hi, folks. John Fredericks here. If you're like me, you may be among the millions of Americans who feel uncertainty when it comes to their health care. We are happy to inform you that there is a solution, and that solution is Liberty HealthShare. Liberty HealthShare is a community of like-minded people that work together to pay for their medical costs. There are no networks, so you get to choose your doctor and your hospital. Liberty HealthShare allows you to easily decide how, when, and where you will access your health care. It could be the best practical, moral, and economical choice for you and your family. family, starting at $107 a month for a single, up to $449 a month for a family. That's mom, dad, and all the kids. This is the way health care should be, and it's been great for me and my family. For more information, call 855-585-4237 or visit libertyhealthshare.org. That's libertyhealthshare.org, and regain control of your health care cost. As a member since January 2015, Liberty HealthShare has been a godsend for our family. Together, we're changing health care for good.
With SRN News, I'm Ron DeRockstra. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo in Japan, after 2 days of talks with North Korean officials, says the meetings were productive, but North Korea disputes that assessment, saying the time spent was, their words, regrettable, and that the U.S. is pressuring Pyongyang into giving up its nukes. Pompeo says he did get commitments for new discussions on denuclearization, as well as the repatriation of the remains of American soldiers killed during the Korean War. President Trump taking the weekend at his resort in New Jersey to do final homework before an expected Monday night announcement of his pick to fill the Supreme Court vacancy being created by the retiring Justice Anthony Kennedy, who's stepping down the end of the month. And a federal judge expected to hear arguments Monday by the Trump administration asking to grant some exemptions to the Tuesday deadline for reuniting illegal immigrant children with their families. This is SRN News.
Download WBOB's mobile app for free from your app store. Powered by Duval County Judicial Candidate Kimberly Sadler.
Here's some great news. If you missed the deadline to sign up for a health care plan, or more importantly, if you signed up for a plan that you're just not happy with, you still have a choice. It's called MediShare. MediShare is a Christian healthcare sharing program. It's been around for 25 years. They have hundreds of thousands of members all across the country. And get this, over the years, MediShare members have shared more than $2.5 billion of each other's medical bills. Best of all, you could save a lot of money with MediShare. The typical savings for a family is about $500 a month. Your savings may be less or more, but think about what you could do with that extra money every month. So if you think you're stuck with a high-cost health plan that doesn't have much to offer, think again. You can join MediShare anytime, so call them today and check it out. Here's the number to find out more. There's no pressure. They're super easy to talk to. 877-64-BIBLE. That's 877-64-BIBLE. 877-64-BIBLE.
Hey, folks, Dave Ramsey here. Stop wasting money on bottled water and hard water costs. Get yourself a Kinetico system, the only non-electric water-powered hybrid on the market to both soften and filter your water. Go see my friends at CGC Water, a third-generation family business for over 65 years, and your local authorized Kinetico dealer. With the Kinetico system, you can save money on water heating bills and cleaning supplies. You can spend less time cleaning soap scum, lime scale, and spots on dishes and glasses. It removes chlorine so your skin and hair feel softer, and it helps prevent laundry fading. Plus, a Kinetico system can actually lengthen the life of your appliances that use water up to 50%, and it protects your pipes from buildup. You can trust Kinetico. Get a Kinetico system today and start saving money. Call CGC Water at 904-645-6060 or visit cgcwater.com.
This was one of the funniest things ever to see Jim Clapper out there. I mean, is he still selling that awful book he wrote? Everyone's out there hawking a book now. No, Jim, here's all we want to know. Were there other informants inside the campaign? Were there other people that you all sent inside the campaign? Lord knows who else they sent in there. They tried to say yesterday, oh, there was no one else. How do we know that? I don't trust these people farther than I can throw them.
Laura Ingraham, now weekdays 9 to 11 a.m. on AM 600 and 101.1 FM WBOB. The latest traffic and weather on WBOB, your 2018 election authority.
On the west side, there's an accident on the west beltway, 295 southbound the ramp from 103rd Street. Another one, 295 northbound the ramp from Blanding Boulevard. They're still clearing one on 295 northbound just beyond Dunn Avenue. That's finally moved out of the travel lanes. Showers and thunderstorms gradually moving further inland. 78 degrees now in Jacksonville. I'm AJ in the Traffic and Weather Center, WBOB.
I told you never to interrupt me while I'm working.
Join the live Twitter discussion.
I'm Twittering.
Did you get my tweets? I just quoted all over the place.
Follow John Fredericks at JF Radio Show.
Coming in live from your nation's capital in Washington, D.C. Looking forward for the fireworks tonight. Fireworks in a couple of minutes, though, when Curtis Ellis comes on, right? Always love hearing from Curtis Ellis from America First Policies. Why do we love America First Policies? Well, because it is the number one political action committee in all of America. That single focus is to support President Trump's America First agenda. Now, if that's not enough, I don't know what is. Right? Great organization. And this segment, guess who it's brought to you by? America First Policies. Now, we need to reform our immigration laws, and we need to enforce them. Now, if we don't have a border, guess what? We don't have a country. Congress needs to fix our broken immigration system. Immigration reform should be guided by these principles. One, the immigration system should be geared toward increasing wages and opportunities for American citizens and legal residents. Two, it should stop awarding visas on the basis of extended family connections. Three, it should be a merit-based system. Four, aspiring immigrants who share our values, speak our language, and have the education and skills to contribute to our nation should go to the front of the line. And we must enforce the law. Immigration to the United States is a privilege, not a right. Now, call Congress now and tell them to keep our country intact and pass meaningful immigration reform. 202-224-3121. They'd love to get your phone call there. 202-224-3121. For more information, you can go to AmericaFirstPolicies.org. That's AmericaFirstPolicies.org. Ladies and gentlemen, this message has been paid for and authorized by America First Policies Incorporated. Joining us now, Curtis Sellis. He's a senior policy advisor of America First Policies. He was also the chairman emeritus. Oh, I love saying that word. It sounds so important. Of the American Jobs Alliance, of which I am the executive director. He is also a former executive in the Department of Labor. He was on the Trump transition team, and he was an early person in the Trump for President campaign along with me. And the only downside he's got is he happens to be one of my best friends. Curtis Sellis, sorry about that. Great to have you with us.
Hey, it's great to be here. You know, listening to all of the things I've done and been and whatnot, it gave me another reason why we can't let the Democrats take control of Congress because, man, if they get their way and they get power, I'm going to be in an internment camp. They're going to separate me from my children.
They're going to look at your resume and they're going to be like, hey, this is the first guy that's got to go.
That's right. We're going to shoot him at dawn.
That's right. They'll put a black hoodie on you and that'll be the end of you. We'll find you floating in the East River. Somewhere, right?
Indeed.
It was like, who's that guy there floating? His hat's floating, right? Take a long walk off a short pier to your hat floats.
That's tell you right. What, a long walk off a short pier.
That's basically going to be their mantra for Curtis Ellis. No question about it. Well, we got so much to talk about, but I cannot imagine for the life of me, and I've been on this for a couple days, is I'm shocked that you have Democratic candidates for president, serious candidates, calling for the abolition of ICE, because if you get rid of ICE, you want to get rid of the country because there's no enforcement then of the borders, so you have no borders. It's not open borders. It's no borders. Catch and release is open borders. Getting rid of ICE is no borders. You just don't have them. You might as well be just a mass of land, right?
Right.
I mean, what do they do? Yeah, Cynthia Nixon, your home state of New York, right, running for
governor on the Democratic side. She's challenging Andrew Cuomo in a primary, and, you know, she's about 35%. I mean, she has a shot in this thing.
Oh, yeah, you know, she does.
She has a shot. The other day, she said that ICE is a terrorist organization.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, where are the Democrats going with this, man?
They're going straight for the heart. They're going for emotional appeal here, you know. Yeah, crying babies, it's all about the children, always is. There's no serious answers as to what do you do to enforce the border. What do you do to enforce citizenship? So on the one level, what they're doing is they're going for power, and they're going for just the emotional appeal. Nobody likes to see crying babies. I mean, that's in our DNA. Nobody likes to hear what's your response when you hear a baby cry. You want to help it. I mean, that's why babies survive, because we have this instinct built into us. But where they're really going is the abolition of citizenship. The abolition, not just abolish ICE, abolish the United States of America. They're on a tear here. They're on a, this is the opportunity for the hard left, the far left, to achieve everything it's dreamed of since Karl Marx. And I'm not exaggerating here. Karl Marx talked about the state would wither away, countries would wither away, the end of nationhood, and you'd have the worldwide proletariat taking power, and you'd have global socialism. And I know it sounds crazy, but that's really within sight for these people. They see through free trade and globalization the ability to leapfrog over revolution in every country to the Trotskyite vision of revolution in the world. And interestingly, the Chinese Communist Party sees this as well. They're now presenting themselves as the global defenders of free trade and the global trading system. They're defending the World Trade Organization. They say the United States is, you know, has dropped the ball, is, you know, derelict in its duties to protect the global trading system, but we, Communist China, we will do that. Well, of course, they want to set up, they want to centralize power in Geneva or in these institutions, these transnational institutions, centralize power there. Then they only have one place to take over the entire world. You know, see, this is the founders of our country believed that centralized power was a danger. So they purposely set up the three branches of government. They tried to decentralize power into the states and decentralize power at the federal level into three distinct branches, because they knew that if you centralize power, put all the power in one place, boom, you're sunk. All, you know, that becomes the tyrant. So what we've done through this post-World War II plan of international institutions and international institutions like the United Nations and, you know, the World Bank and the IMF and, you know, go on down the list. We've centralized power. We've put all the power in these international institutions where there are no checks and balances and there's actually no accountability. And this is why, and everybody's been indoctrinated. This is a good thing. This is a good thing. We are all global citizens. We're all players in the global economy. We are all. What's missing from this whole equation is the idea of nationhood. Well, so we've centralized power in these we've placed power into these international organizations, and now China just has to take control of those, and then they've got control of the whole world. So now I sound like a crazy conspiracy person at 8:16 in the morning. But getting back to the immigration,
right.
This fits into the left's vision, to the Democrats' vision of we really don't need borders, we really don't need nations. Migrants should be able to, people should be able to go wherever they want. And as you say, it's an unholy alliance. Big business wants the cheap labor. Democrats want the votes. And the hard left wants to not just abolish ICE, they want to abolish the United States of America because we are a racist, imperialist nation who stole, you know, blah, 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 stole the land.
There you get to it. We're finally getting somewhere, Curtis, and I agree with what you said. We're finally getting somewhere. Because you have to look at this policy of getting rid of ICE and these protests, which, you know, I get it. I get you don't want kids separated from their parents and the president fixed that. But, I mean, I also look at one city in the United States, just one, right? Not 50. Let's look at one, Chicago. So far in 2018, in the city of Chicago, Illinois, 65 children under the age, this was as of the weekend, 65 children under the age of 15 have been shot dead.
Mm-hmm.
65 children shot dead under the age of 15. Half of those, Curtis, shot while in their home by stray bullets going through walls. Half of those, 15, shot in their bed. The other half playing a video game. Where's the outrage here? Yet these children have been permanently separated from their parents because Democratic-controlled cities can't get crime under control, and 65 kids are shot dead under 15 by stray bullets in Chicago. Where's that march? Where's that protest? Nowhere to be found, is it? Can't find it. Doesn't exist. No one cares. Why? Because it serves no narrative purpose.
Exactly.
I mean, you look at what the Democrats are doing here, and it's a head-scratcher to me, because if you're calling for the abolition of ICE, which is the one law enforcement organization that we have that deports people. Basically, then you get in the country illegally, whether you come in, cross over the border, or you overstay a visa. There's no consequence to that. You're in here forever. So you have no borders. You have no country. And so I think it is. You got the really progressives, they just want to eliminate the United States of America. For some reason, they just hate it. And you got the other half that wants votes. And you combine these two, and it's an unbelievable coming together of chaos, as far as I'm concerned.
Look, you can go down to Augusta, Virginia, Augusta Correctional Center, and I can show you all kinds of people who've been separated from their children. I can show you, or, you know, go to Deerfield, go to Culpeper, go to Sing Sing, go to, there's any number of prisons across America where I can see, I can show you tens of thousands, if not millions, of children who've been separated from their parents. So where's the outrage there? I mean, look, nobody likes to separate children from parents, but actions have consequences. I'm sorry. I mean, life's not fair. Things happen. If you want to put this on a rational level, have the discussion on a rational level, say, so what do we do? The point is not to have a discussion on a rational level. It's to appeal to emotions and seize power, use this as a ticket to get political power. What frightens me is once they get the political power, they actually have talked themselves into believing this. And as we've been saying, the left, the hard left, actually does want to see borders abolished.
And they just want to start it in the United States so we can have the crisis that they're having right now with migrants in Germany and France and all across Europe, which is becoming a disaster for them. You know, the Danes the other day passed a law for migrants. And they said, you know, what history shows, if you don't assimilate into the country, you have no country. So they passed a law. And the law is basically, if starting at the age of one, you have to be, as a foreigner, you have to be indoctrinated into Danish culture. And if you refuse to do that and you're on welfare or any government program whatsoever, you don't get a check. I mean, they figured it out, right? They got all these migrants in, and they're not assimilating within their society. And they look at history. Every society, Curtis, that, and I don't want to get big picture thing, but every society in history that's collapsed, if you look through history, every one of them, it's because other cultures came in and nobody assimilated, and then it all blew up.
Right.
Right? That's every society in the history of the world that collapsed. That was the reason. All right, look, I want to get to
yeah, and you have to go back to bilingual education in right. in America. It's you look at the voting. I don't know what it's like in Washington D.C., but I know here in New York City and up in Boston, the official government communications are now in like 50 languages. I mean,
right.
you've got. It's not crazy. Just English and Spanish. You've got English, Spanish, Chinese, Vietnamese, Russian, Turkish, Urdu. I mean, where does it end? Where does it end?
It's an odd situation.
We're supposed to be ashamed of our culture. See, this is the odd thing about multiculturalism. We're supposed to embrace all cultures, but America can't have a culture. America, we're supposed to be ashamed of American culture.
Exactly.
At the
exactly.
same time, we love all these other cultures.
Well, and like
people are supposed to be proud of their cultures unless you're American, and then you can't have a culture.
It's like President Obama said, his goal was to transform America. I mean, that's what he wanted to do. Curtis, I got 6 minutes. I want to get the column that you wrote the other day, which I put out, which is fabulous. It's called "The Silent Trump Supporter Has Gone Global, and So Has the Red Hen." Would you elaborate, please?
Yes. Look, we heard in 2016, and we know that there are all kinds of voters, the silent Trump supporter, people who would not tell pollsters that they supported Trump. Now, in 2018, the silent Trump supporter has gone global. Because what we're seeing now is you see heads of state, you see all these people, Justin Trudeau and, you know, Angela Merkel and everywhere, they ritually denounce Donald Trump to the public, right? Ah, we hate Trump. He's horrible. He's awful. This is his agenda is absolutely just terrible, what he's doing with trade and borders and everything else. But when you look at what they're doing, not what they're saying, they're actually supporting Trump. Merkel just had to close the borders in Germany, and she wants to push out half of those immigrants that came, send them back to other countries. You've got Trudeau is the Canadian government is now putting safeguards in place to stop a flood of imported steel and aluminum from other countries. European Union met with Chinese vice premier the other day. Top mm-hmm. line in the story was, this is all, we're going to take efforts to resist protectionism, right? I mean, this is sort of boilerplate language, they all say, ritual denunciation. But they then acknowledged that the World Trade Organization needs to be reformed. The European companies are not being treated fairly in China. Foreign investment in China is limited, restricted, even as the Chinese are able to invest in Europe any way they want. They're concerned about, the European Union is concerned about Chinese theft of trade secrets. I mean, just go through the whole list of everything Donald Trump has been talking about, and you see every country on earth is actually saying they've heard the wake-up call. And they're saying, yeah, we've got to do something about this. But they'll never tell you that. And the media will never report it. I mean, all of these facts were in the same Bloomberg story that said China and the European Union ritually denouncing protectionism, a rebuke of the United States. And then 11 paragraphs down, they say, the European Union is concerned about Chinese overcapacity in steel, theft of intellectual property, concern about restrictions on European companies, foreign investment in crucial technologies and infrastructure by China and Europe, big concern, and the WTO has to be reformed. So to me, it seems like the story of the little red hen and not Lexington restaurant with filthy canopies, according to Donald Trump, President Trump. The little red hen was a story about nobody wanted to do the hard work. The lazy dog and the sleepy cat and the noisy duck, they didn't want to help the little red hen when she had to plant the wheat, mill the flour, and bake the cake, bake the bread. Mm-hmm. But when it came time to eat the bread, oh, yeah, we'll be happy to help you eat the bread. You know, Donald mm-hmm. Trump as President Trump, has done the hard work. He told all the experts and the academics and the no-think think tank experts, you know, your policies haven't worked. It's been a disaster. We've got to do something new, something different. He had the guts to stand up to, you know, the old conventional wisdom. And everybody, like, ran for the hills, like, we can't have this. This is horrible. Mm-hmm. But now that he's shown a way forward to correct all these, the trade imbalance, the employment opportunity imbalance, the investment imbalance in the world, now they're all, like, coming around. So right. They want to eat the bread he baked, but they didn't want to be there to help bake it.
Exactly. And look, you know what? When you get to the tariff situation and you hear these countries whine, like Justin Trudeau, the man-child, whining about this, and they've been screwing the U.S. forever. They've just gotten away with it. And so what the president has said is, look, you don't want tariffs? Fine. Then everybody take all of them off, and I'm good. And nobody will do that, right? Because they want what they want. And they have gotten away with this, Curtis, for so long. They've screwed the U.S. worker because our country has just looked the other way in order to have bilateral good relations or whatever it is that the, you know, State Department has been saying that that gibberish they do. Whatever it is that they want, the American worker has been kicked to the curb by government after government, administration after administration, at the hands of other countries taking advantage of us. And this is the first president who stood up and said he's had enough. And you look at the economic indicators and this economy, which is just exploding like crazy, it's just hard to argue with him. I mean, he's getting tremendous results. There's rhetoric, Curtis Edels, and then there's results. And this president is getting economic results that are off the charts. That's why he's going to win again, only bigger.
He has to win again, and we have to win in November. I mean, these elections are so important because, as we started out this half hour here, the crazies have taken over the Democratic Party. I mean, they may be exploiting, pulling on our heartstrings to gain votes and to gain the House, but once they get it, it's Katie barred the door. They're not going back.
Well,
this is the way it always has. You had the revolution in Russia. The Democrats took over. The Mensheviks. They were democratic. You know, they weren't the crazy communists. But once the liberal democratic forces took over and overthrew the czar, it didn't take 6 months before the crazy communists took it.
We got to go. Curtis Sellis, you can read him. Just go on my website, johnfredericksradio.com. Thanks for being with us.
You're listening to The John Frederick Show. Common sense for the Commonwealth. On great radio stations across Virginia.